Thank you for everyone for coming and for being interested in our work. And it was an interesting 3 months for both me and Aisha, I believe. So this project can be this project consists of a few parts which were developed step by step, and each part contained its difficulties and everything. So yeah, the first thing we did was we worked with the database on fetching all the data. For that, we created an SQL database in Toolforged environment. And the whole project for now can't be run without access to the Toolforged environment, because you basically don't have access to replica databases that easily. So yeah, I think Aisha can walk through different tables we have in our database and its columns. Aisha?
Thank you. I think it will be better if I give an overview of what we're doing before I get too deep into the tables and rows, etc. So basically, what we started with was finding out what are the important modules in across the wiki projects and suggesting them to users so that users can start to merge them and create a repository, a unique single place for all the modules to work from. So that started that on a broad level, it has two paths to traverse. First of all, detect which are the important modules, and then find out what are the modules similar to this specific module so that users can go, oh, okay, so these 4 to 5 modules look like they do the same thing. Maybe we can merge them and turn it into one thing. And when we start using abstract Wikipedia, that's when it shines that it's using just one instead of lots of modules. So yeah, first of all, as Jade mentioned, we started looking at all the replica databases and collecting everything we know about the modules themselves. And then we use the Wikimedia API to collect the source code of the modules themselves. So some of the columns that I don't want to show any scary tables on the screen. So I'm just going to say it mainly consists of the source codes and then the number of transclusions, number of pages a module is transcluded in, the number of language links it has, number of page links, and couple of things like that. Not everything was used in the end, but you get the idea. So yeah, so what we did next was we tried to detect which of these are our important modules. And from a broad view, it looks like maybe if it was used in a lot of wikis, maybe it's important, maybe it has more page views, it's important, and so on. So we basically created kind of a scoring method. So what we did was we do have some detailed technical discussion type of stuff in a PDF format. So I'm not going to go too deep, but what we mainly decided to do was give each module a score, and whichever has the highest score is more important. And whenever we get inside of our tool or web interface, we will give the user a list of all the important modules. Based on language, based on wiki project, and maybe users can browse through everything at once if they want, and they can also give weights to the various features. So I think it's now the best time to start showing the web interface, and Jade has worked a lot to create that. I think Jade, if you want, you can start showing that as we discuss it.
Sure. First of all, I'm not web developer, so it was quite an interesting experience for me, because for now I'm thinking about working on this side of development more. So yeah, I can. So yes, basically for now we have a website which works in Toolforge environment. Give me a second, I'll send a link here. As it's in Toolforge environment, it's linked to our, well, name of a project. This page which I sent is a page specific for the one script type. So it's basically a page of a script, but here the interesting thing is that it shows modules which were clustered with it, and it has links to it. So yeah, it's basically the argument models, and we can see that the argument models exists in almost every wiki, so there are a lot of similar detections and everything. And here's, but for getting to this page, there's a main page, which looks quite bad, but that's temporary, I believe. But well, it does the main thing. Here are a few filters which are implemented. For looking through the data, the main thing, you can set up a weight for the metrics we are looking through. Like for now, the most important metric, we believe, is a normalized amount of transclusions. But you can set it to 1 or even 0 and just remove this as an important metric. Well, yeah, as Adam mentioned, it takes a few seconds to load the material, but especially for the closed scripts, but that's because of the thing that it should probably be moved to, well, to another GET request, but it takes quite some time, a few seconds usually, to work with the database because it contains more than 200,000 entries. So looking through all the clusters does take some time. What else about the main page? The filters you can use is using language and using project family. Languages and project families are detected by scraping from meta database table. There you have all the stuff like database name, language, project family, and everything. So that's how it's used. And another thing that was done, a lot of modules are used only to store data. And in some cases, it can be easily detected because these modules look like return, and then goes a lot of data, a huge lower table and everything. So these modules can be easily detected, basically because they have returned something. So we consider these modules data modules and mark them especially. And if you want to disinclude them from the returning scripts, you can do that too. Yes, that's basically it. For now, there are some.
Jade, your audio is cutting out for me right now.
Okay, I think she's having some internet issues, so I can continue. If it's okay, can I share my screen? Maybe show the same screen you've been looking at? Okay, sure.
Yep.
So, okay, just select that. Great. Can you see?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, great. So, yeah. So, this is what you've been, I think, looking at, project families. So, we can select any special family or maybe select all And then we can select some languages or all. And then we can either choose to see all the modules or just the modules that are functions and not data. And then these are the weights that I was talking about. So maybe we want to prioritize the number of pages a module was transcluded in and not other things. Maybe we don't want this. Maybe we want, I don't know, like language links. The modules that have the most language links are the most important to us. So after that, we get a list of modules, which is taking a bit of time. Okay, maybe I'll try again. Okay.
I'm really sorry, some issues.
Yeah, that's totally okay. Yeah, so this is the part where we detect the priority of modules based on the scores. And these scores are whatever number you want to give because they will always be normalized in the backend. So go ahead. And then we have these modules based on importance. So this is the most important based on these weights you gave. And if we click on it, we get its source code. So we can look at its source code. And we have, okay, this is a really long module, but we have a list of pages that are similar to it. I mean, modules that are similar to it. Now, how we did this similarity analysis is also available in depth in our fabricated task. But in short, what I did was I took this source code, treated it like a normal text, and found out word embeddings for these guys. And then I used optics clustering algorithm. After a lot of tweaking and a lot of experimentation, we finalized using these options. And these are the modules that fall under the same cluster as this guy. So if you look at the source code of, for example, another one of these, it looks quite similar. And if we look into it in depth, probably they do kind of similar work. So this is the aim, that we want to show users which modules are important, and we want to show them what are these modules similar to it so that they can start merging, doing stuff with it. Yeah, I'll stop presenting now, okay? Great. So this is quite like the very overview summary of our work, and we are hoping to create a wiki page based on these and links to all the fabricated tasks and everything we have to say about our work in depth. So looking forward to feedbacks and your views. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is really good work. And it's been a pleasure working with you. I hope that we're able to spend more time with both of you in the future. So that was the first time I actually got to use the tool. This morning I was testing from like a kind of junky device. And so it was a very pleasant surprise to see like, oh, this thing is really working. So very cool. And the amount of work that has gone into building the data pipeline and to like selecting the right sorts of methods for getting the data in a shape that would work in a tool, just really, really good work. So for our audience who will be watching this, could you tell us about some of the challenges that you've faced along the way?
Okay, I think I can start because I have a lot of things in my head. So first things first, the amount of data was not small. So usually when we're doing data analysis, we're just looking at data, we're starting to visualize data, but those things really don't work out with a large amount of data. So we had around like 300,000 modules. And since it's text, there's a lot of things in it. And I think it was kind of a few GBs. So I could never load it all into a single Jupyter notebook and look at it. So that was one challenge, and I learned a lot how to handle big amount of data. And we also learned about using databases and not CSV files for most of our work because, well, That's quite efficient and organized. And the second thing that comes to my mind is how to work with such skewed data. So when I started analyzing the data, the number of page views, number of page links, I'd said like 99.99% of the data had very small value. So not all the modules were not really used in that many wikis, but a few modules were used in a lot of wikis and were viewed a lot of times. So usually when we're doing data analysis and kind of machine learning kind of thing, we are usually looking at those things as outliers and we kind of remove them from our analysis, but this time it was opposite. So we were actually focusing more on the outliers than the normal distribution. So that was kind of a tricky experience for me, but I finally managed to find an algorithm that matches the embedding. And yeah, I think there are more improvements possible. And as I talked to Adam earlier, that I will be looking into it more because it's quite an interesting topic to work on. Yeah, I think Jade, you can go ahead.
Well, yeah, for me, a lot of things I found out while working on this project and which were troubling for some time. The first one was, the huge amount of data. And just looking at the whole database, it's quite a confusing experience because it's really hard to guess what exactly would you need while trying to analyze that and everything. The other thing which took quite some time for me was always working with Toolforge environment. It's just somehow it happened that usually I was, setting up SSH connections and everything. So I believe I worked with it from quite different perspective. And it's not always, the documentation wasn't always answering my questions. So I had to do quite a research on looking how to set up the website properly or looking how to set up SSH connections and everything. So yeah, I believe that was my biggest troubles.
Thanks. Yeah, and thanks for working with different people to get to the bottom of some of the infrastructure related challenges. Open source projects are always a work in process. So as you look at where the work is today, like, what do you think are some potential future directions or things that, like, if you had time, you wish would be explored?
Well, as I said, I think there can be more progress in the similarity analysis part of the project. So currently we're using fast text word embeddings, which treats the code basically as plain text, which is not too bad, but still. And then we are using optics. So what I think is a possible improvement would be to treat the code as code instead of text. So I did explore a bit, and I saw there were a couple of models, huge models like BERT and then Code2Vec, which translates a piece of code into an embedding, which is just a vector of numbers. So yeah, those things need a bit of tweaking because all our modules are in Lua, and most of the trained models out there are in popular languages like Python and C++. So I think we do have the kind of data we need to train one of those models, but there are some tweaks that we need to do beforehand to process the text to feed it into a training model. So if these tweaks are solved, maybe we can actually have a trained Lua model, and which can actually benefit not only us, but maybe also others who are looking into using Lua for something. I don't know. Okay. Yeah, that's one thing.
Well, for me, the biggest thing I wanted to improve is definitely web interface. It's like I have some kind of love-hate relationship with it, because I definitely don't have enough experience to solve things easily, but I want to. So I think I'll continue improving it just because it's, well, I really want to make it look good and work good. So, but yeah, this code-to-vec embedding would be really cool. We talked with Aisha about it, I believe, about a month ago or something like that. So yeah, it's another thing which really, I believe, should be done. If it won't help us, it might help the community, because we'll be able to, publish somewhere a trained model, because we do have a lot of Lua source code now. Yeah, I think that's it.
Folks from the foundation, are there any questions that you'd like to ask?
This was really cool. Thank you so much, both of you. I look forward to playing around with the web interface to kind of query different kind of questions I have. Do you think if we had provided some form of if there had been a second language, you know, as well as Lua, if there'd been one in JavaScript or whatever, do you think that would have made things worse? Because, like, fundamentally, our work is to create a site with lots of different languages. And do you think that would have been harder to analyze or easier because of the metadata we're building?
I think it would have been harder if there were multiple languages at play, because when we're treating Lua as text, I mean, the syntax and everything just matches up. So for example, if the same method was in Lua or in JavaScript, those probably wouldn't have matched up as well as both are in Lua. So yeah, I think if they're in different languages, it would be a problem, but I'm not too sure about when we treat them as code and maybe create an AST from them and things like that. So if we could do that, I think some of the problems of multiple languages would be alleviated, yeah. Something to experiment.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'm thinking that it would really make things harder on the current level of our work. But if we are talking about JavaScript, for example, or Python, I believe these are languages which are quite popular in abstract Wikimedia proposal. So they might be used there. For them, there are trained models in code-to-vec. So it's, on the other hand, it won't be such a big problem to cluster them.
Comment and a question. I'm really impressed. I read through the report midway through and looked at some of the fabricator tasks and helped a bit there, but this is really, really neat looking. So thank you again. Question, I wonder if you're possibly already doing this, but in your further report, maybe you could give us some examples of weightings that you found have been particularly useful when using the search. Or possibly my colleagues will have better insights into how to use it already. But as a non-computer programmer, I'm not sure where to start with the inputting random weightings into the search here. I think that would be really useful for future reusers to have some examples of which are good things to look at. Yeah, I'm super looking forward to any further write-ups on the web. Thanks.
Thank you for the presentation. It was really cool, and I also want to echo what everybody said. I look forward to looking at this. Also look forward to digging into the data. I am interested in, like, so I understand why treating code as text was the thing that worked. and why you say you would want to treat it as an AST. But I am also very fascinated that it worked as well as it did. So did you find any maybe like surprising insights? You know, when you treat code as text, was there anything that this method captured that kind of surprised you?
Okay, so basically one thing was that most of the codes that we have in modules, I mean, most of the similar modules are actually really very similar. So that really helped. For example, if we have a module yes, no, in NWiki and someone wanted to create a yes, no module in BNWiki, the first thing they would do is just copy and paste it and then create a bit of modifications. So this does not always work to cluster them together, but most of the time it does. And so that's one reason why treating them as text was really successful. One scenario when this will be a very bad thing to do would be if two codes did the very same thing, but they were written in very different ways, which is not very common in case of in our case, but yeah, that would be more appropriate if we used Code2Vec, but for now, yeah, this works.
Well, another thing I believe might help in how it worked, and I really well appreciate Aisha for this idea, that she kind of decided that there can be half clusters. Like when clustering, there are clusters which are totally together. Well, they're numbered, like this is cluster 2, this is cluster 50. But some entries are, for some entries, numbers are like 2.5. That means that somewhere in between, and we are not quite sure, but we can put it in both, and then the user will decide whether is it close or not.
Okay, so just giving a little background here. So basically what happened was the algorithm we were using for clustering the modules was giving us a lot of noise, which were not really noise. The problem was that these modules have very similar text in them, so they are very densely clustered. So something, if it goes a little beyond that, it's considered noise. So what I did was there were a bunch of noise that were together. They look like a cluster themselves. So I gave them a cluster value of, for example, if it was cluster 2 and then some noise and then cluster 3, I'd give it cluster number 2.5. So now the user wants to see, okay, now I see cluster 2, but I think I need to see more. They can look at cluster 2.5, which the web interface will show. They don't have to do that. But then they can look into cluster 3 and see, okay, maybe it's not that related, but kind of related. So it's kind of a progression. And that's this really nice thing about the algorithm, that it gives us these clusters.
Cool. So could you tell us about like pleasant surprises that happened along the way during your work?
I think for me, I wouldn't say it's a surprise, but it was really pleasant that I got lots of help from everywhere around. So whenever I was stuck, and sometimes it was very silly, I'd go out, ask in IRC or tag someone in Fabricated Task, or maybe I'd even ask Jade about stuff, and then I'd get feedback in no time. And that was really, I wouldn't expect that much help around me. So it was a bit surprising actually, but it really helped me progress throughout the internship.
Yeah, I believe help from everywhere is the thing I really appreciated too. Thanks a lot, Hannah, for helping me. They've set everything up. Thanks a lot for Aisha for answering my strange questions and helping working with pandas. Thanks for everyone who I asked on RC, because that was really helpful too. It's quite of insight, because usually I'm really cautious about contacting people, and I think it helped me a lot.
So I guess as you think about like your own career arc, like, do you have any insights from doing this work that you could share with us and with our viewers?
I think I'll let Jade go on this one while I think.
Sure. I've been always troubled by what I want to do with my career. Like, I'm interested in a lot of things and I just can't decide. But yeah, I'm not sure I've like chosen my path or something, but I believe the first thing that's happened is that, I think for now it would be a lot easier for me to work with a huge community. So yeah, I won't be so scared in applying for positions somewhere remote with a lot of people. And the other thing is that, yeah, I think I got more experience with data analysis and it still excites me. And I got more experience with web development. Now it scares me less. So yeah, it was, it gave me a lot. It really gave me a lot. I'm not really sure what I want to do next, but that still counts, I believe.
Okay, so I guess for in terms of career plans or things like that, I was more inclined into machine learning, so part of things, modeling and those things. And I wouldn't say I did not enjoy data analysis. That was really an integral part, but I did not ever enjoy it like this time. Like this time, the data was super interesting. And every time I like do some sort of analysis, I would like, oh, okay, that's interesting. I did not know that. That's how Wikipedia modules are like, things like that. So that was one interesting aspect. And I think I'm ready to dive deeper into data analysis and engineering section of the career path. And another is open source. I have not really, I have, but not this much, delve into open source projects and maybe created and served a tool in web services. I mean, I wouldn't even think about it in the first go. But this has given me a lot of confidence in starting to work more on open source and look at other projects, other people's codes. And also the incentive to write cleaner codes and better documentation, because I know someone else looking for volunteering in open source projects will look at my project and be like, okay, that's something interesting I can work on. So yeah, that these are kind of the things I'm getting more involved in the future.
Okay, I wanted to give Foundation folks a moment to ask any questions that they'd like to ask additionally.
I would have questions, but it's on the danger that I might ask questions that you were discussing earlier because I haven't, sorry, I simply overslept, sorry. So, if you bear with me, you can always say this has been answered before, which is totally fine. I was looking at the results that you have in the tool, and one thing that seemed to pop out to me is that the modules themselves internally translated. Like you see that names of variables and so on are translated, the comments are translated, and so on. But the name of the modules seem sometimes translated, but much less often so. Is this just, what was your, working with the data more than to me, what was your feeling on this? I mean, I'm just curious about like how pervasive English naming is in the whole thing across languages.
Upon and my analysis, I think it's quite pervasive. So most of the time it's the same. Sometimes it's just a transliteration of the word module itself. So it's just the word module if I'm rewriting it in Bangla, I'm just using Bangla characters to write the same word. And translation is less often the case for the name title of the modules. And the source code, we have not looked into enough source code in depth to say that the variable names are different or something like that. Most of the cases, though, the codes are exact copy-paste, and some of the terms are different. So yes is hain in Bangla. So we just write the word hain instead of yes, and not instead of yes, sometimes with yes. So yeah, things like that. Variable name changes and are not that pervasive, I don't think so, but could be. We haven't looked into enough to say something conclusive about that.
Well, looking at the data, I can add that for a lot of modules, names are not translated simply because a lot of popular modules are basic ones like arguments or yes, no, or something like that. And they are basically copied when the wiki started. So it didn't need any translation because it's used somewhere deep in the core. Another thing which I'm not sure if it's true or not, but I believe the translation in titles are more common for big Wikipedias. Like you can set off clusters of huge Wikipedias like German one, der, or Russian one. Here the module names are usually translated. But for smaller ones, I believe they're just copied in English.
Do you have a feeling for whether site links are used consistently with the results of your clustering?
Could you elaborate a bit? I didn't understand. So
yes, we often have site links, for example, between similar categories and obviously between similar articles and so on, which is when we would say in Wikidata, oh yeah, this page is about the same topic as that page on that wiki and so on. So I would expect that modules often also have site links, and was wondering if they are. If you found basically clusters that go beyond what site links do and or they're inconsistent with what the users explicitly added as site links.
Okay, so in terms of site links, I'll focus on language links more because, well, the language links just list all the modules, say similar modules. I mean, not similar, the same module in all the languages. So yeah. That was one of the metrics that we were looking at when we were browsing to see if the modules were clustered properly. They did go out of the modules a bit, the language link cluster a bit, but not too much in the first look. But if users want to see some modules that are not exactly the same and a little bit different, we can move on to other similar clusters. So in the web, we will have an option to see more similar clusters. So that will basically give us, okay, so these are all the modules that are in this cluster, but here are some more that are not exactly in this cluster, but they're near this cluster. Yeah, so those will give us more links that are outside the language links.
Okay, well, thank you for the discussion, the presentation, taking questions. Before we wrap up the recording, is there anything that you'd like to share with people who are interested in outreachy internships in the future? And, you know, in particular, outreachy internships at the Wikimedia Foundation?
First of all, I'd say just go for it. It's an amazing place to be in. And the work is also amazing, especially if you connect with the project and the goal of Wikimedia in general. just keeps you going. I mean, usually when we're starting up a work, we're just like, okay, so I'm doing this, but where will it be used, or will it be used, or how far will it be used? But these questions are like very well answered in this case. So Wikimedia's goals are just amazing and keeps motivating people to work on stuff like that. And the community is also amazing. So if you're an outreach intern, and I mean, hoping to be an outreach intern, definitely look into Wikimedia projects. They are outstanding.
Yeah, I totally believe if someone wants to apply for outreach, they should do that. And Wikimedia is one of the huge communities which would totally help you with everything if you are worried in your abilities. And yeah, as Aisha said, you should go for it. You should at least try, even if you're worried about yourself, even if you think that some things might go wrong. In the end, it would always be a good experience for you and something useful for the whole community, for lots of people who might be affected by what you did.